Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, welcome back to Soul Sisters. I'm your host, Jessie Katz. Dar and I have an iconic guest on the show today. Now, I know we've used that word before, iconic. We toss it around here and there because we do have a lot of women who fit the bill, but maybe none so much as today's guest, Jane Birkin, who I literally have a picture of hanging on the wall in my apartment, which I realized as I was preparing to speak with her for this episode. I was doing my research, as I do, a good student, and looked above me and hanging over my couch is a picture of Jane Birkin in the Antonioni film Blow Up from 1966. So that's how long she's been an icon for. Of course, she's gone on to do many more films. She's also an artist who's recorded many, many albums, some of which were, of course, with her once husband, the late Serge Gainsbourg. She and Serge together had the daughter Charlotte Gainsbourg, who was a previous Soul Sister on the show. And Jane put out an album last year called Birkin Gainsbourg La Symphonique, which was a tribute to her late husband. And she's been touring on it. And she stopped by when she was about to perform at Carnegie Hall to chat with us about everything from Blow Up to now. We ran the full gamut with her. She does not love the word icon. We tested it out in her presence. She's extremely humble and corrected us on that, or at least her version of what the truth is. I think she lived up to the label, but you guys can be the judge. So, okay, we'll get to the episode with Jane. Just a reminder, please follow us on iTunes. Subscribe to the Soul Sisters channel if you have not already. You can also watch this episode filmed on YouTube, on Billboard's YouTube channel. So we are out there. We are available. We are ready for you to watch and listen and consume however you please. All right, enjoy today's episode of Soul Sisters with Jane Birkin of the Birkin Bag. Jane, thanks for coming on the show.
That's all right, thank you.
It's an honor and a pleasure. I was sitting on my couch yesterday thinking of what we could talk to you about today, and I realized that above me I have a picture of you on my wall that I hadn't actually connected until yesterday. That I have a still from Blow Up hanging in my apartment, and I said, oh, wait, I actually look at her every day. Yeah. Anyway, so Amazing. This is a little trippy to have you here in front of me.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Positive. Anyway, so you're here in New York because you're performing at Carnegie Hall, right?
Yep.
So that's not a shabby venue.
It's not a shabby venue.
And it's the first time you've performed here in a while, right?
Yeah, I did the Town Hall.
Okay.
And I did the French Institute.
Uh-huh.
And maybe a third. So I've been here before on shows, one of which was with Nobuyuki Nakajima, who'd done the orchestrations. I'd done another show with him. I think that was at the Town Hall.
Okay.
That was a
lovely.
Different project.
Yeah, it was about, I can't even remember.
Okay.
5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Do you come back to New York often to visit your lovely daughter who was just on our show also?
I'd like to have come much, much more often, but yeah. I was too ill. I couldn't. I wasn't allowed to. But now I'd love to.
Yeah.
Because it's really so easy and such fun to be with her.
Right.
I'm so stressed out for Thursday that I'm in a hotel.
Right.
So, so I feel as if I'm in a foreign land.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But this won't be the first time you're performing with this arrangement, this big orchestra, no?
No, I've been doing it for about a year.
Wow. How does that feel?
It's lovely because the 65 musicians with cellos and violins and I don't know, it just is one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. So it's as if you were suddenly allowed to sing on a bit of Gustav Mahler. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm put into quite a lot of comfort by Nobuyuki, who's given me bits where I start off with the piano and then the others come in. And so I'm on a sort of cushion of velvet. It's rather lovely. Mm. I just mustn't bish anything up because you can't suddenly say, oh, whoops, I'm starting again with 65 people.
Yeah, that's a lot of people to get back on the same pitch. Well. Yeah. So let's zoom out for a second. Right. If you could just tell people what project we're talking about exactly and maybe how it came to be.
It came to be because about 3 years ago, I did a project with Michel Piccoli and Hervé Pierre, which was reading Serge Gainsbourg's words without any music.
Okay.
And it was an idea that Philippe Le Richomme, my director artistique, and Serge's had when I didn't know what to do, when my daughter Kate had died, and I'd stayed, you know, as people do, at home and not moving for a year, and then got ill. And so I couldn't really do a show, but the idea to actually get out and be amongst friends, which I was with Piccoli, who's played my father in many films, it was actually the best possible thing to do of an evening.
Yeah.
So we went round most of France, a little bit to foreign countries, not that much. Then we went to Canada. There I met Monique Giraud, who's a friend who was a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And I was explaining that usually Serge's exquisite words went with classical music when he wanted to give us the very best. So if he panicked because he felt he hadn't given me enough Babylon in Babylon, then whoops, it was on Brahms, or same thing for Jane B on Chopin. For Charlotte, it was a Zeste de Citron. And there again, classical music, lost song, the same. Initials BB for Brigitte Bardot was equally classical music. So I was explaining all this to her. And she said, well, why don't you do it with a symphony orchestra? Mm-hmm. I said, well, that would be pushing it a bit, given my voice. Mm-hmm. And she said, but I could give you one, in that the Montreal Philharmonic Orchestra could do it with you.
Uh-huh.
And you could have a night at the Francofolies, which is one of the biggest French festivals, French-speaking festivals, and they know Serge's work so terribly well.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, well, if it's just a one-off like that, maybe if Philippe Le Richomme could choose the little, you know, the songs I'm going to would sing that would look right, seem right, sound right with a symphony orchestra, and if Nobuyuki Nakajima could do the orchestrations, it would be like movie music.
Mm.
And in that case, perhaps one wouldn't be bored.
Mm.
And perhaps in that case, it wouldn't sound pretentious to be singing with her. Because people do it, you know, musical people, when they don't know what to do at the end of a career, then alley up.
Right.
And so it had to be different, and I've always admired movie music from John Barry's, but also Michel Jarre, also, you know, the fabulous music for Fellini. So it was so, and they came up with the orchestrations, and yes, you don't know which song you're going to. When you've got classical arrangements, you can have rather frightening cellos and violins going on whilst the little tune sounds so sweet and everything's going well, no undertones of disaster.
Yeah.
And it's very, very exciting. Mm-hmm. So that's how it started for one go.
Mm-hmm.
Then I lost my voice in Canada. I was taken to hospital. They said to annul the second show. And I thought, well, no, perhaps if I can just speak it.
Uh-huh.
And it works as well.
Huh. With the orchestrations.
Wow. Because otherwise it means they wouldn't have heard all the wonderful orchestrations and everyone was there to do two nights.
Right.
And then we should have gone through China. But I wasn't given my permit because of sticking up for the Dalai Lama.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So goodbye, Shanghai.
Wow. So you had to cancel dates there?
Yeah. And it was going to be recorded for a live record. So,
oh, man.
But it was lucky because it would have been a one-off. Perhaps it would have been disastrous. And as it was, we went to Poland, where there's a wonderful symphony orchestra, where we had a date anyway, and we just kept them for 5 days, made the record. And that came out first, so people that didn't really believe in the project, you could say, listen to this.
Listen to, yeah, I mean, it's gorgeous. It definitely is proof that it works.
Yeah.
So the title of the new project, the symphonic orchestra project, is Berkin Gainsbourg Le Symphonique. And how much is that, is it taken directly from the music of Jane Berkin, Serge Gainsbourg from 1969? Because the title just suggests that it's a sort of reimagining of those, of that collection, or but is it not necessarily to be thought of that way?
It doesn't matter how you think. I think that the most beautiful songs were the ones that were at the separation and after. So Baby Alone in Babylon with Les Deux Sous-Chics and Fille Le Bonheur, I think are the most beautiful songs that have ever been written about separations, but tout court, absolutely wonderful. But it can't just be miserable. And then Philippe thought of many other songs like the Chanson de Prévert that I'll be singing with Rufus Wainwright. Wow. That... and other songs, Les Javanaises, that was certainly not of my epoch. He wrote it for Juliet Gréco. Why not one that he wrote for Adjani? Why not Lagadou, which is rather jolly? Because otherwise it's just so sad.
Need some levity to
you
it.
You need a bit of levity, as you say.
And to span more of more of his work.
Yes, and,
so it's
and
not
they
just
were the
that
one
time.
Exactly, and so that was the dates that were the earliest ones, really, because the ones afterwards were indeed sad.
Now, Jane, I have to ask you. You mentioned John Barry and you love his music. How have you been able to maintain such a healthy relationship with the work of your ex-partners?
I haven't.
No? Meaning you've gone... Oh, okay.
I mean, John Barry never wrote anything for me, so there's nothing to sing.
Right.
Serge wrote for me from when I was 20 until the day he died.
Yeah.
I mean, really, in that he did a song called Amour des Feintes, which is Love of Feigning or Love of the Dead, that was literally 3 months before with 12 songs again. And with Jacques Doyon, Lou Doyon's father, then I made movies, of which I made three. And if I can stick up for them in cinematics, then I do, because they're probably the best films I ever made. So, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm just saying it's like this beautiful thing that you, I would imagine that emotionally you've had your ups and downs through these relationships breaking apart and moving on and different chapters and how you relate to everything to do with those relationships, but that you've been able to keep the love of the work, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And I wasn't very steady-headed at the time.
Yeah.
Yes, it's quite romantic. It's romantic, the idea of you and Serge separating, but they're remaining creatively potent
What was extraordinary for me, that someone would go on wanting to write for you, whereas you'd gone off with somebody else.
Yeah.
And that person needed you for... maybe his very feminine side. Yeah. I think that's what he gave me. He went on doing songs so he could, I don't know, burn his 500 franc notes on the television or be outrageous.
Right, the provocateur.
And that he needed.
Yeah.
But he also needed a sentimental side and a broken side.
What did that feel like at the beginning when you were separated and then he came to you with these songs, with new songs? And was it surprising to experience that at the beginning? Like, wow, we're still going to maintain this relationship?
Sure?
Or was it just completely natural and it didn't even feel strange?
No, it wasn't natural. It was very strange. No, it was.
Yeah, so that's what you would imagine.
Yeah.
You go back to the house where you've lived for 13 years and he's at the piano. And then you cough a bit because your cigarette gets in your eye and he says, ah, so now you can't even take some cigarettes. No. And you've... it was definitely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was honoured. I kept on saying, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it, because he was so tired. He did two songs in the night and then he'd come to the recording studios and say, that's what... And it was Fille Le Bonheur and Les Deux Sous-Chics. And then the next day he'd come back and he still hadn't slept. And wham, he got another two. Mm. By the end, we'd come to Friday. I thought he wouldn't make it. And I could see him visibly moved behind the glass. All I could do was to sing as high as I could to try and do it as best I could. But of course, I realized that he was asking me to sing his pain. It was it was a very, very strange, for the others not so, or not so much so. And he liked the idea that, I can't remember what he said, something like, we're history, you know.
But yeah.
And so he played on that, and so did I.
Yeah.
Because I was so grateful.
Yeah. How much of your identity as a singer and a musical artist is tied up with him? And how much?
Totally.
Like 100%, you feel?
Well, I would think
60%. You don't have to give an exact percent. Oh, 60, yeah. Okay.
Because I've made records of duos with other people, because right. everyone wrote, when he, after he died, everyone wrote me duos. Mm-hmm. And actually, it did rather well. Mm-hmm. And it was fun because you could be with people.
Right.
And it was from François Hardy, absolutely everyone, yeah. Souchamp, and Étienne Dao. They were really wonderful, sweet songs that they gave me to sing that they'd written for me. And then another record, similarly. Then I wrote my own record, which didn't do well, which was called Enfants d'Hiver, Winter's Children, but of which there were at least two or three songs that I would be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And then... no, the rest is him. Mm-hmm. And of course I get asked to be on other people's albums or to sing a duo, to do this or that. And that's fun because it's something that's rather lovely to be able to still go on doing.
Right.
But the identification is totally with him.
Yeah.
And sometimes you feel that actually you're not worth much without him song-wise.
Mm.
That's very true.
It's interesting, the one noticeable... thing that's not on the new album in this project is the duo that you had with him, the famous Je T'aime song. And I heard you say that, how could it be?
Mm.
The other half isn't there, and it would be inconceivable to record it or perform it with someone else, which just speaks to, I think, how alive that music is. It's not, you know, reinterpreting the music of Cole Porter or someone else, some other composer that it's been done a million times and you're bringing your own thing to it. That's something in itself. But to these songs have a live, like living history where you wouldn't think of singing it or performing it with someone else.
No, we never did because we did it in what, 68? And he and I never sang it together ever. Mm-hmm. Not through the 15 years that we were together either.
Mm-hmm.
Or... the rest of the years, of course not, because it was in those days too, it was a recorded thing and it was so famous,
right?
And for a charity show we might have mumbled it once. I'm not even sure that we did. I'm not even sure. So it wasn't something that I didn't do directly. He died out of being, you know, sacrilegious, you
yeah
know? Not at all something we didn't do at all, point. And certainly not to have somebody else. And I wasn't courageous enough to talk his bit. I suppose one could have done, but it was so much his song, and he'd already sung it with Bardo that I didn't feel that that I could.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, on this concert at the Carnegie Hall on Thursday, and on the record, I've taken two of my songs off so that Nobuyuki Nakajima's versions of Initials BB, A Zeste Citron of Charlotte's, and Turkish Market and Je T'aime Non Plus are played by the symphony orchestra, and it brings tears to your eye, that, because you realize what a wonderful song it was. It's just da 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 and three notes, da 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 four, and you know where you are when you heard it. And so it was irresistible and so beautiful that I thought that it would be missing. Even though it has nothing to do with me, apart from Je T'aime Non Plus, nothing, I'm not going to sing them. But I thought it should be there with the orchestra.
So they're played, just not sung.
Nice.
Yes, for about 6 minutes.
Oh,
absolutely wonderful.
Wow. I feel like we just harmonize our wow.
When you hear that, are you transported back to 1969? Or I'm curious how it was, the experience of being a young actress turned... you know, singer and muse of this pop star in France. You know, the swinging 60s were, you know, in full bloom at this point. And what was that like for you? Like, what, you know, can you go back there viscerally?
No.
No.
Do you want to?
Do you? No. Like, no.
No, because I don't think you have any idea. I didn't have any idea of what it was like or how unflustering it was, or how normal it seemed. Mm-hmm. I mean, now perhaps it doesn't, but when it happens like that, little by little, and you're number one in charts of because of J'aime non plus and everything like that. No, but when I do hear it at the end of the show, when it's the orchestral version, then it does make you cry, because then I know how moved he'd be. Mm. I know that he would not have a dry eye. Mm-hmm. It's too lovely, and it's what he wanted, because for his film Je t'aime non plus, he was able to have nearly a symphony orchestra, because it was movie music and it was paid for by the producers, so it was luxurious. Mm-hmm. And he wanted it to be the most beautiful thing on his film that was otherwise a film that was set in, I don't know, 1950s petrol pump sort of very Dennis Hopper land.
Right.
But he wanted this sumptuous générique.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And he was so thrilled by it to have so many. It's rare to be able to pay for so many musicians. When you're a French composer, you don't get paid to do the movie. Mm. So they pay for the séance, but they don't usually give enough money to have that many instruments. So okay. He was allowed to have this luxury for Je t'aime non plus and Manon, mm-hmm. because they were both movie musics. Uh-huh. And I saw what it did to him. So I know that he would be well pleased. I know he'd be well pleased actually to be in New York, mm. and to be at the Carnegie Hall. And he didn't play New York. He didn't even play Canada. Wow. I mean, he was very short lived as a live artist. Sadly.
Yeah.
So there he is. There.
Yeah.
His music's there.
That's beautiful. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It must be remarkable now to see the appreciation and adoration for him now. Mm. I mean, I feel like he was beloved in his time in France and in Europe, but more so now here. Would you say that's true?
I think it's true that it's... I mean, the day he died, it everything stopped in France. He thank God, had been loved before he died. Mm-hmm. He could have missed it. He could have been someone who was so outrageous and so much ahead of his time and never repeating himself. I mean, his work's a bit like somebody... I mean, it's not pretentious to say Picasso, because I can't think of another example where somebody had a rose period and a blue period and a cubic period and a surrealist period, and just went on changing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think probably he'd think it was old hat even to bring in lots of instruments and be sumptuous. Yeah. I don't know. Always, always, always ahead. So it was amazing in that case when he pissed a lot of people off, where people could be very shocked by him, that actually about 2-3 years before dying, I think he knew how loved he was by the whole of France. And Philippe le Richomme did TV shows with him where 50 little boys came forward. It seems strange now that 50 little lads would come forward with gitane cigarettes in their mouths, singing, Je suis venu te dire que je t'aimais. But there he was crying, because of being so moved at seeing these little boys. So it was the mood of France. So when he died, actually, he was probably the most loved person in France. Wow. So now the appreciation of his work and of his literary work and of how probably poetically wise he's changed everybody since, they've all been influenced by him, is something that's got bigger and bigger. But even when I sang at the Savoy Theatre after he died, and I'd gone over to England and the British press, I mean, the chic ones were fine, but the Sun, or I don't know what, trashy newspaper, said, "Oh, you're going to show us a bit of leg, Jane, for the photo." I said, "No." And then they said, "Have you made any other dirty songs, Jane?" I thought, oh, how can they be so unaware of who Sergius is? Then instead of crying, I thought, no, I must go back to France and I must ask other people of whom they've heard so that I can prove it. So I rang up Yves Saint Laurent, Jean-Luc Godard, Mitterrand, Chirac, absolutely, Catherine Deneuve, Françoise, I mean, every single person that I thought, at least they know the Minister of Education, and that they would each write who Serge was to them. So when Chirac wrote, "Serge is our Apollinaire, our Baudelaire," I think it was Mitterrand, then I went back to England with it all handwritten and printed underneath and translated into English, and I was able to say, there, voilà, that's what they think of him in France. And beautiful. Dirk Bogarde came onto the stage to explain to the English who I was to the French, because he too had had a career in Italy where sometimes the English had been a bit blasé and hadn't perhaps realised he'd done films with Visconti. So, you know, it suddenly made me aware that in a very short time after he died there, you know, it was, he was as great as, considered to be one of France's greatest writers, if not the greatest of his time.
Yeah. How aware and comfortable are you with your own legacy?
Which means
you are such an icon and mean so much to so many people through so many things that you've done over the years. But I get a sense that you are a kind of self-deprecating, very humble person.
I'm not a humble person at all. Not at all. It's just that people exaggerate when they say fashion icon. I mean, even the word icon, I don't merit that in reality.
Okay.
I think I've done about 10 good films where I was all right and some more than all right. But for the ones that most people know, like Blow Up or the Agatha Christie films, I was nothing in them. I mean, the films were, but I was nothing. To be honest, they came into being great cultural things, but it wasn't like Charlotte. Charlotte was an actress right from the word go, and she had her own statement to make. And yes, she was something. Kate, my daughter, as a photographer, made a statement. Lou writes her own stuff in English and writes the music. At 30, suddenly was Artist of the Year, you know. So they've really made their mark. I was a sort of jolly actress that suddenly did a bit better than people imagined in dramatic things, like with Patrice Chéreau.
Right.
That was really good.
Uh-huh.
And with other plays I've done, that was really good. But so it's not self-depreciating. It's, I think, very lucid. And I mean, if you're known for a bag, then what can I say? You know, it's really not to do with anything I've made, or I would have loved to have done something that was very typically mine. They've all been associated really with somebody else.
Are you seeking to do something that is yours?
No.
No? But I mean, that you have time, but
we will God see. Willing
for all but of even us. This right now, that doesn't feel it because of how much because of it is because it's Serge.
No, I think it's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah. That's great.
That and Arabesque with the Arab Orchestra. I think they were really great.
Yeah.
But I can't say it's not as if when you ask me the question of whether it's completely me, no.
Right.
It's not. But I think that I was one of his best interpreters. I think because of being an actress, I play it really well.
Uh-huh.
Because I knew the person so well, then I have to watch it, because you can't suddenly cry or mm-hmm. be indecent, or anyhow you lose your voice, so you can't. But, and it's, what, been 26 years now. So someone will take over those songs. It won't matter anymore what the actual inspiration was. My mother had a song written for her, which was A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, that was very, very well known during the war. It was written for her. Wow. She was Noel Coward's muse during the war.
Wow.
I mean, and now people will sing A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, possibly. Another song that was written about her, which was da 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 da, the telephone, no, no answers, these foolish things. Because Ma picked me up once saying, when I got something wrong, like only 20... pounds a kilo or something. She said, it's not that. And she told me the other price. And I said, well, how would you know? And she said, well, it was written about me. So the telephone that rings but doesn't answer.
These foolish things?
Yeah. So later on, you no longer, if they're great songs, then other people think, oh, yeah, well, my phone didn't ring either. Or his phone didn't ring either.
Yeah.
And they won't know where it had started off.
Oh.
Well, great songs are great songs.
Yeah.
How does that tie into your decision to now release maybe some of your diaries?
It's all I had left. It's all I have left to show, to give. And some of it's very, very funny, much funnier than I thought, the anecdotes. And some of it is such a terrible, constant insecurity that it's quite wearying, really, when you've got that characteristic from being 12 until being 60, you know. I can understand that perhaps it didn't work with everybody, you know. I think John Barry got really pissed off. And I mean, you can't be with this child who's cutting up their legs because you haven't thought about them, or you haven't got something to say in the middle of the night. So, yes, I wrote a play called Sorry, Were You Asleep? About somebody who bugs somebody all night long because they can't sleep. I mean, I couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The other person's asleep, and it's really annoying. You try and find things to wake them up. Little pretexts. Oh, sorry, were you asleep? So that was a good idea.
Yeah.
But I can sort of see on reading the diaries that you actually don't change.
Yeah.
And the unbelief in yourself, the cruelty at boarding school from other girls, the feeling that you were not attractive. Not that you weren't pretty, but not attractive to the person you loved, and that they went. Then after that, to have met Serge, who actually drew girls that looked half like boys, and actually found the beauty of boys very irresistible, then what good fortune. I mean, some people say, well, you can get over it, you know, not having any bosoms. Well, it's okay. To have actually somebody who says, bosoms frighten me. I think he exaggerates a bit after Bardot. I think it's... I think he might have said it's
case by case.
A bit. Yes.
Yeah. Well, is there some catharsis in sharing these things with the world? Does it help you let go a little bit? Or what is the compulsion to share?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that probably closer to the time... it'll be rather unpleasant.
Will it be coming out as a book in book form? Or did you consider turning it into music form?
No. Already I'm stressed out at the idea of it actually coming out, because it's fine to talk about little anecdotes, but the rather measly, horrible things about oneself that you would have rather cut out or changed.
Right.
I felt morally I couldn't do that. So they're there.
So it'll be unedited.
So...
wow.
I've taken things out that would wound people,
okay,
but not that would wound me.
Yeah. Do your daughters have first read on it? Or?
They did, and they didn't want to.
Oh. Okay. Do you think they were afraid they would ask you to make changes, and that's why they didn't want to see it?
Or? I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I think that they probably felt that I would be probably quite fair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they know that it worries me more
to think
that I would leave something in that would wound somebody.
Yeah. Is it nice that you and your daughters are having, in some ways, parallel careers right now? Do you guys get to share? You and Charlotte had albums out around the same time, right?
Same time, and Lou at one time, there was Charlotte and Lou and me.
Yeah.
But it was fun, but we're very pudique. We don't talk about the métier. Okay. I don't know whether other people have got actresses, daughters or mothers and fathers. Yeah. It's not something we talk about. We talk about private life. Mm. But we don't talk about... I didn't even know when her show was on in Paris because I didn't ask and she didn't say.
That's so
and
funny.
I don't like flaunting either. And I don't want to know whether she's coming on Thursday and because I want to be good and I'm too frightened of letting her down or her being disappointed. Yeah.
But would you like to see her perform? Are you tell me when your show is.
I've got my tickets already.
Right.
Of course. Of course.
That's funny.
And I think she'll scoop up Artist of the Year as well.
Yeah. That album is brilliant.
Wonderful.
Mm. Yeah, truly. And please tell Lou that we would love to have her on this show.
Oh, yes. I will tell
Lou. Yes, the trifecta.
She's writing it right now. She's written it.
Yeah.
And she's in a studio now.
Nice. I follow her on Instagram. She's a very good Instagram poster.
She is.
Yes.
Good recommendation.
She inspires me. She always makes songwriting look very romantic.
Ooh.
There's always a great cup of coffee.
No, but she's also somebody very fascinating to watch because I think if she finds a... I don't know whether you'd say a delight in Instagram, but that it's worth doing for her is that when she sees something that she likes and she's terribly inquisitive, so if she sees a wonderful expo or if she sees a musician or if she sees a film, usually that aren't making much money possibly, then she puts it online and then... People
helps
might
other
follow
people
her and go.
Yeah.
So I think that that's what she finds the joy of it. Mm-hmm. And also she finds something to say each day.
Right.
I wouldn't. And I'm not of that generation.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know how much I like it.
Yeah.
In that if you're on a holiday and you think you're far away from everybody and there's a photo of a sheep that everyone says, oh, those sheeps were quite funny and in Manchester. And you think, hey, who was with us in Manchester with a sheep? And then you think, oh, yeah, bloody Instagram.
Right. No, it's true. Always a blessing and a curse. Yeah. Well, Jane, thank you so much for
coming on the show.
And have a great
Have a wonderful time.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the album is absolutely gorgeous. So for those of you who won't be seeing it live, just dwell on the album. It's an experience in and of itself. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. Je t'aime et je crains de m'égarer. Et je sème les grains de pavot sur les pavés de la noix. Tu sais ces photos de l'Asie que j'ai prises de son hasard. Maintenant que tu n'es plus là, leurs couleurs vivent en Paris.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.